Thanks for listening to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Patchworks and hosted by me, James Gird, and my co-host, Paul Rogers, who are, for the first time, have recorded in a room together rather than remotely.
Well, we've done one.
Have we? I can't remember. It's been that long ago. But if this is your first time on the podcast, we bring you interviews with industry thought leaders, and we speak to a lot of e-commerce retailers, and we help people understand around e-com strategy, customer experience, and the intersection with technology. Today, we are doing our talking heads, where me and Paul sit down and chat about things in the industry. We do one every month around a roundup of what we're seeing and what's interesting out there. So I hope you enjoy it. All we ask in return for all this amazing free content is, can you share our posts, let other people know about the podcast to get us new listeners? And it has, if it is your first time, give us a rating wherever you are listening. So we're going to talk about what we're seeing in the market right today in the February roundup. So let me kick off. There's a lot of stuff going on. We're just going to pick out some of the interesting stuff we see, some of the key trends with our clients or interesting news we picked up from other people. First one is, and it's, I guess it's an inevitable AI klaxon because everyone seems to be obsessed with AI. But actually we're starting to see some real like practical use cases and trend in terms of like adoption of it rather than just talk about it. And the big one is around customer services. And we'll talk a bit later about what we're seeing amongst our clients. But the big news this week that we've seen, and this comes via Tim Richardson's newsletter, which is well worth signing up to on LinkedIn if you haven't already, is about Klarna announcing that their AI chatbot for customer services, which they are using to service customers for like regular inquiries around things like refunds, returns, etc., is actually now doing the work of 700 people. So they have a global workforce, about 3,000 people in customer services. It's going to reduce to 2,300 because of the role AI is providing. So AI enables, you know, mass inquiries to be handled at scale and to handle repeat types of inquiry and, you know, automate responses to avoid humans having to be involved and to free up humans on more value add tasks. But equally, what I found interesting in the article from the CEO of Klarna was him urging caution around the fact that businesses can't wait. This is now happening in terms of customer expectations for service through bots. But equally, that it's going to cause some disruption to humans because it's going to take away some jobs and people need to be brought on that journey. But also businesses need to think about how they plan for that impact and how they change their hiring structures to make sure that they are not hiring people into roles that are going to disappear. So this, for me, I don't know what your take on this, but I think this is a really interesting area where there's got to be a bit more focus now on, I guess, guardrails in terms of how you adopt AI and what impact it'll have on your business operationally over the next few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think this just applies in AI generally. Like, I was listening to a podcast this morning on my way to work, the All In podcast, and they were talking about is more focused on Sora. But essentially, yeah, kind of like how you manage that and how you kind of adopt some of these like LLMs, but kind of apply parameters to them. And to be honest, I can't remember some of the terms they used. Like, it was a pretty smart episode. But they were essentially talking about how you manage like edits and revisions within like a fixed kind of environment also, almost without having to like re-prompt and like regenerate an image and stuff like that. But yeah, I think the next stage for AI is going to be all of this kind of stuff, which is going to be super interesting. But yeah, I think we could probably talk about AI for the rest of the day.
Yeah, well, we will be doing a focused episode on this around like strategy and ops soon. We're in the process of rebranding to Inside Commerce coming soon, and we're going to focus more strategically on it. But yeah, I was at an event the other night with Fergal from Validify. We had a panel around AI. And there was two really interesting, well, they were all interesting. I don't want to say the other people weren't, but the two ones that stood out for me was there was a chap from Rackspace talking about the work that he does with the C-suite of large businesses around AI adoption and the fact that the business has to be able to adapt its internal frameworks in order to be able to cope with the use of AI and the impact on people, but also the impact on customers and having a brand guidelines and having proper controls in place for how they use it. And that's a big cultural shift for businesses that work, that move slowly for organizational change, enterprise level. And the second one was Diageo talking about the use of AI within the creative and design process. I know you were talking about this the other day at your event where they are using it to help like creative teams generate using generative AI briefs for agencies, whereas previously people would go onto the internet and search for like images and creative that reflects, you know, the brief that they wanted to demonstrate about mood boards. Actually, they're generatively creating the mood boards to speed up the creative process and actually get closer controls in kind of brand execution and briefing. But with that requires a lot more planning work to make sure people are educated on how they use these tools to get the right outputs.
So I think we may as well, I've got an example when we come on to our final bit where we're talking about what's in the market, that I was going to talk about AI, but it ties into what you've said, so I might bring it forward. But yeah, I went for lunch with Andrew from Current Body, Andrew Showman, who has nearly been on this podcast about 100 times, but every time has a reason not to come on. We'll get him on soon. But he's founded Current Body, which is a super cool business, multi-brand, kind of shifting a bit towards being their own brand. And they're super high revenue, really high growth. And he's a really good example of like early adoption. So him and a few other people that are in the same world are very good at kind of, you know, things like AI, things like Web3, whatever. They'll have an early take on it and they'll start to adopt quite early. And I asked him what he was doing with AI and his response was very little. And then he started to talk about a few use cases, which I actually thought were really interesting. So one is that's relevant to what you're talking about. So they use Airtable across their business. I think they're working with Olive Rhodes, actually. And they're gradually moving towards PIM, but at the minute they're using it more for like different workflows around creative. And then as part of that, they've got some content being populated. And he's got a use case where he's using AI to actually validate that the content is covering the right things, which I thought was really smart. And then another one that I was going to say is that a few of our clients are using Sienna, which is basically AI around customer service. People use it for kind of ingested information and generating responses and a few other things. And he was really early to that and he's had really good results of that alongside Zendesk. Yeah, and then the other one that we talked about quite a bit that we've been playing around with is more of the visual content. So before the Hotcon event that James kindly spoke at earlier this week, I was trying to generate assets, so product level assets by my phone, which was ridiculously easy. But we started doing it at like a catalog level, which will eventually be used for like dynamic product ads and stuff like that. So yeah, that'll be the other one. But yeah, definitely seeing more brands using it and building stuff. But I think I was really impressed at how Current Body, basically they're using their internal development team to just build out little products and use cases, which are.
Patchworks, the world's most modern integration platform. We can connect any key e-commerce system from storefronts to marketplaces and ERPs to fulfillment solutions. This allows retailers and partners alike to simplify their tech stack integration and do away with point-to-point vendor-specific apps. We can automate and streamline the flow of data across your entire e-commerce business. Find out more at wearepatchworks.com.
Interesting, yes. I have a feeling we'll be doing more episodes around the practical use cases and strategic needs around AI. Let's move on then to tech, as obviously we spend a lot of time looking at tech, talking about tech, implementing tech. And we've mentioned this, or we've referenced this before, and it's not new news, but we're going to talk about the implications and that, and what we're seeing in terms of reactions, which is Shopify announcing its license fee increase, which amusingly came literally 2 days after I'd said to a client when I was looking at a new project and identifying risk of like cost increases, that I hadn't heard any mention that it was coming anytime soon, but it could be, I was expecting in the future, then literally 2 days later it landed, making me look really stupid. But we've had time for the dust to settle now and for people to take on board the implications. We're not going to talk about the cost changes, but my take on it was, and I was chatting with someone at Shopify yesterday, it is I think it's fundamentally justified because they're investing $1 billion plus in R&D every year. The platform now compared to where it was 5-6 years ago, it's hugely different in terms of capability, international markets. We're talking about like the advancements of Shopify sections and content, then the advancement of the product catalog with tags and meta fields. So loads of the issues that used to be like pain in the ass to work around are getting removed. And that's just getting quicker and quicker in terms of tag data. So actually from a 0.25% license fee was really low up to 0.35 or 0.4 for a 1-year deal. Does not feel an onerous one, but when it comes as a surprise, it can unsettle people. So where are you seeing the reaction?
Yeah, so I've seen various reactions. Definitely seen a lot of competitor vendors using it to try to use it to their advantage, which I don't think will surprise anyone. I've been in various like different groups, and I've seen some people definitely more frustrated than others. My only thing, Shopify, so I personally think it's fair. I think we've discussed this quite a lot. I think they're reducing costs in different areas of the platform, such as subscriptions or, you know, such as trying to build the search capability where you might not need to use a third party anymore. And it's obviously improving constantly all the time. And comparatively, probably is the difference between a Shopify and their competitors sometimes is too much. Like, so I think they're within their rights to do it. I don't think they delivered it amazingly well. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I would say is like, it wasn't really any warning. And the thing that Shopify have done historically that I thought they were getting a lot better at was like they'd pre-warn partners at the time. And I don't think that happened this time. So that's the only thing. And I think they probably could have maybe justified it a bit more within the comms. But overall, I think it's completely fair. And actually the interesting thing that I have to say, I'll say it so you don't have to. So in the past, we've done episodes and you've talked about you've openly said you've been and increased their prices over time. And I said, I don't think it's part of the strategy. And it doesn't surprise me too much. And I think the amount they've increased is fair, but I do still think the strategy is mass adoption and them becoming the windows of commerce. And then they can either monetize through payments or their relationships with companies like Global-E or whatever else, or they can figure out new strategies. But yeah, super interesting, but you're welcome to say I told you so.
Smug grin. When you said, no, it's not coming, I was like, oh, sure it is, mate. It's coming this year. Yeah, it came way quicker than I expected.
Yeah.
But you're right, though. I think the way they landed it was rubbish. And considering how amazing they are at landing product news around additions, which I consider, to me, is the best execution of roadmap marketing I've seen in the industry, I was really surprised by it. Especially, I'm not a senior Shopify partner. I'm not a big age. I work, I bring projects to them, like I bring projects to big commerce, other platforms. You're really well connected. You go obviously part of the Shopify Council, etc. To not go to the senior agencies in the network, I'm really surprised by it. I think that's definitely.
I'm surprised they didn't leak, to be honest.
I didn't
hear anything about it. I think maybe the day before someone.
Maybe they just excluded you from
maybe,
meetings.
Yeah, many of you know. The only thing I would say is I do think alongside the price increase, which is obviously going to benefit them, I think the bigger strategy was, we'll keep the price the same, but you sign a 3-year contract.
Yeah.
And I think it's too easy for other platforms to basically come in and be like, we'll charge you a license fee, we just want your logo. Or, you know, we'll put the bill for the build if you go migrate to us or whatever. And then, you know, you've got people on like a rolling monthly contract. So I think that's a no-brainer. It, you know, that will add a lot of stability, you know, similarly to how Azure Salesforce, where you have to plan, you know, 12, 18 months in advance if you're going to re-platform.
Yes.
So yeah, that's very clever, and I think that's just as important.
Yeah, it is. It's great for existing customers because, let's face it, if you're going to renew, you're not going to sit for 1 year. You'll go for the 3 years because you're not going to want to re-platform straight away. So the thing that I'm interested in, I think it's way too soon to see, but coming back to your point about the value of the license because there's more capability, so you can do some things natively without having to use third-party apps, which has a friction with the partner ecosystem because it takes away some of the business from the partners. But the big question here becomes, when does Shopify become a Salesforce, for example? And I'm not denigrating Salesforce because Salesforce works well for certain types of business and delivers a lot of value. But for other businesses, it's too costly when they're not using all of the native capabilities and using lots of third parties. You're paid a big license fee for lots of the value. At what point do the Shopify's features, I mean, like subscriptions is not as mature as the leading third-party subscriptions engines.
Yeah.
The CMS works really good, is not as mature as a leading, like, the CMS players, like a storybook, shedding budget. At what point do they start losing projects and the hype goes because people go, well, actually, that license fee's gone up and I'm not using that stuff, therefore I'm not perceiving the value of the rope. I feel that there is a potential tipping point.
Yeah. I think Shopify has been quite good at balancing like ecosystem and native functionality. that feels like, you know, in a lot of cases, they'll first introduce the APIs in order to potentially build something, but it's going to be a huge amount of time and resources to achieve the same as what's already out there. Then they'll build a native capability, so Shopify email or Shopify subscription or whatever else, but it won't be at the same level. But I think, I personally think, you know, there is, the ecosystem is big enough. You know, there's over 3 million Shopify stores for a native capability, for bespoke, for someone to build their own bespoke solution, and then third parties. So I think that's it. But I think right now they're quite balanced with the pricing. I think the Salesforce problem, I mean, a big part of Salesforce's problem is the economy. It's like everything around Salesforce, like that product or that business is built for everything to just cost a lot of money. Like the, you know, the SIs have to make a certain amount of money. Even like some of the commercials around tech partners and stuff, like there just has to be a certain level of like income for everyone around Salesforce. Whereas deep down, I think Shopify is building a solution for the merchants only. Mm-hmm. And their partner ecosystem has been important. Like growth is important, but they're not like some of the other platforms that they used to, where they're merchant and they want to commoditize. And partners are a part of the strategy, particularly going into enterprise. But yeah, and then I think they'll figure out how they monetize it. And I think they're a bit less one-dimensional than just license income. That's the only thing, more like a super strategic business. I think Toby's, you know, a visionary, and I think they'll be really creative. And I think, you know, if you look at the average Shopify, for enterprise user, you know, realistically, majority are going to bring in payments income, POS income, you know, there's like potentially wholesale B2B now. There's so much revenue for that.
Yeah, that is a good distinction. I think actually saying it's built for merchants because the cost of doing things is lower. The ability to turn things on, ability to release, and the lighter test it. I know there are always exceptions, but I think that's a good differentiation. Right, let's move on. So let's talk about technology because it. What's happening, interesting things, interesting conversations we've been hearing. So I had a really nice chat with somebody you know very well, Liam from Harper Concierge, who are grown really quickly in the premium space for providing like white glove concierge services to luxury brands who want to give like VIP customers white glove service of let us deliver it, you try it on. Very, very smart. They launched a new service, which is the Triumph 5, which is on Rixo. Am I saying it right?
Rixo.
Yeah. R-I-X-O. It was, where before checkout, you can select whether you want to buy it or whether you want to try it. And the try-in service is managed by Harper and it's backed by Signified. So they take the fraud risk, which is the really smart bit because obviously that takes away the concern of the retailer, basically. Well, the products disappear, what do I do? And they manage, therefore, the close back through the normal returns process. Customer gets it delivered in the standard delivery mechanism. They get to keep it 5 days, and any items they don't want, they send back, and they get refund. And the items they want, they keep, and they get charged for. And this was done from there. There's data modeling done to understand, like with customers, what the issue was and why people were like getting items or then returning too quickly, or you know, not committing to purchase, and because people felt like needed longer to think about a purchase. So really, really smart service. It's obviously early days, but I can totally see this growing in popularity for people trying to reduce some of that friction and concern around purchase. And also reduce returns rate is one of the elements of this. And this is a big value play of giving people more time to think and have it and try it and get used to it. And normally you find once somebody's used something for a bit of time, they're less likely to return than just, I've got a package, do you know what? So I'm just going to send it back unopened. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I really like it. I get on very well with it because he plays a similarly low standard of golf to me compared to some of the other people we play with. And yeah, we get on very well. I've spoken to him and Ritzer about it actually. And I think one of the big selling points that he's always said is AOV because it's part of the process. I'd encourage you to try other similar items. And then essentially, if you end up with 5 items, you might keep 2 instead of buying 1.
Yeah.
And I think he's got some stats around that for the actual concierge service. But yeah, I think there's probably an education piece for like consumers and retailers. But yeah, I think it's high potential. I really like Harper as well. We've got a few clients that use it for, you know, concierge and same day delivery in London. Yeah, and you know, people really like it. I think he's got some really good data as well, actually. And I know we both spoke to him about coming on. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how much he's willing to share, because obviously his concierge, or I would call it, are sat with customers for half an hour while they try things on, and they've got like pre-questions to ask it. So he's got some really interesting consumer insights as well.
Yeah, I think that's the untapped part of what he's doing, is the consumer insight to feed back to help sharpen merchandising strategy and product strategy. I think that's really interesting. And the other comment that he made, which I thought was another interesting thing to keep an eye out with him, is that he's got some more mass market merchants now who want to elevate the brand and attract a more premium and aspirational customer. And by offering this type of service, even though it's not relevant to their core, like especially the concierge one, Love Bit, helps them to package a service and a proposition to a different market. Yeah. Really, really interesting. The other bit of tech that I've discovered, and it's not new, but it's originated in Australia, now making waves in the UK market. And the let's start with the issue. The issue, and I've got a couple of clients at the moment who already talking to me about this issue, and they want to fix it one in a replatforming. And this is just a common issue. Orders get placed, they get processed, they are shipped down into ERP or warehouse management systems, and they can't be touched. They can't be edited. It's very rare for people to have a process where an order is editable within the ERP because of all the operational implications it has on that, especially if it's a big invoice. And people who end up with manual workarounds where they might have a manual workaround with someone in the warehouse who holds an order while they change something or add an item in, and it's convoluted. But most people end up just cancelling the order and then creating a new one, which is, again, it's a faff and a pain in the arse. So this app, which is Shopify only at the moment, Order Editing, smartly works through the checkout, accessibility, to give people that window of opportunity. So prior to the order being pushed down to the other systems, it allows them the business consent threshold of like 30 minutes to 60 minutes. And the email comes to customer saying, is your address correct? Did you need to add anything? You've got 60 minutes to do that before your order's processed and shipped. Taken away loads and loads of customer service issues. And he's got some data from one of the merchants in terms of they timestamped how much savings from customer service time, and that therefore gave them the ROI to pay for the tool, which I think is very cool.
I think that's really interesting. So I have not looked at the tool, but if that does it in the way that I assume it does, because all of our clients want to do post-purchase recommendations, but the issue is that everyone, like even those using middleware, that is such a back office intensive process, because delaying the order going down to the ERP is a nightmare. And then as soon as you actually send the order down, you can't then in a lot, or you could, but you know, you need the wrong bottleneck style people involved in order to edit an existing order. So if this works the way it does, I think that could open up a lot of revenue, because most of our clients that want to do it just give it up, because you know, TT. ERP SI need to be involved.
Yeah, the cost of doing it at the ERP level with any customization or any edit, if it's not set up already, is prohibitive normally. Anyway, bandwidth as well. The interesting thing, I haven't found out how yet, and this is the next conversation I want to have. My last LinkedIn newsletter has more info on it. It's got a link to Hamish McKay, who's the guy who's co-founder, really smart chap, hit him up for more info. Is that he said he's done some work on a project to fix the issue with editing with NetSuite, which is obviously at the ERP level. I don't understand, I haven't got into it, but I know that he basically got some help from Aaron at Hikhesion to help understand that ERP process piece to crack that so that it could work in that way. So that's the next level I need to dig in to find out what.
Yeah, it'll be something to do with in any other platform, just change the order status. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he's doing. Should get him on the podcast.
Yes, we will do.
My next one. So I was going to, so this is kind of going backwards, but also moving on to the next section, which is the things that we're seeing amongst our client. My next one was going to be, and I thought of it because you mentioned Harper, the one thing that we've seen a lot of recently is people are like obsessed with cities. So in our case, mostly New York, LA and London are like the three big cities for revenue. And we've seen like a big resurgence of last mile and same day delivery options. And Harper is one of those because they cover London, and then there are a few others in the US. But that's definitely a trend that we've seen that I didn't have listed down, but you inspired me.
I am inspirational, it is true.
Shall I come on the other
one? Yeah, go through it, mate. Crackle.
So another one I've got is the solution called Visually that we were looking at a little while ago. And then more recently, we've had quite a few clients start playing around with, and our team are playing around with. And it's basically no code, A/B testing. They do personalization, a few other things as well, but we've mostly used it for just testing. And it's really cool. So it's basically an edge technology, and then it inherits your theme, and then it allows you to basically adapt the front end without needing developers. So that's pretty cool. That's Shopify only. Another big focus we've had amongst our clients, I'd like to give you, and people are definitely talking about more now, is that same first party data piece. So partly due to tracking, and then partly for personalization. But basically, a lot of people are moving towards maybe instead of that kind of 10% off email and potentially SMS data capture, towards building an account, and then as part of that process, requesting more information, and then surfacing that on the front end, but also pushing it into their CRM or CDP. CDP is another focus alongside that. Another one that surprised me a bit over the last few months, and maybe it's our clients more so than the market, but we've seen quite a few people looking at or releasing native apps. So Represent as a client of ours released it, as we've got a few others working on them. But yeah, we've probably got four or five clients actively working on a native app. But a lot of that is CRM and loyalty focused, but all of them are trying to build some level of uniqueness, be it by content or resale or whatever else. But yeah, I thought that was quite an interesting trend.
This is really, it's kind of really cyclical, isn't it? Because native apps,
yeah.
When I was in a project quite a few years ago, 2015 to 2017, I was working with House of Fraser, and the native app, specifically the iOS app, was a massive focus on so many retailers were doing it then, and people were doing like the wrappers app, so they didn't have to build a complete custom one. Others were going full custom. And then it just, you know, app usage, app installs, and longevity of app users for retail dropped off a cliff, and people stopped doing it. And the web capabilities,
yeah,
especially around, you know, yeah, exactly. And then the ability with the capabilities of modern browsers, the capability of things like offline mode, notifications. So I'm really intrigued to see it coming back.
The drivers have typically been, so there's a lot of data around customers being more engaged, so repeat customers.
Right.
Being more engaged within an app. And then the other one is the value of push notifications, which is pretty high based on what I've seen. So yeah, they've been like the main drivers. And also it's like, it could be a better environment for like non-transactional experiences. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And then the last one I've written down, which I don't think is for you or anyone else, it's the same like obsession with new customer acquisition. And I think more of our clients have started like adapt their site for new customers now, which is a trend, and building more like, you know, purpose-built landing pages and more kind of like brand experiences to try and get people bought in if they're, you know, paying for traffic or, you know, yeah, getting customers from anywhere else, just trying to like really design experiences for them rather than just having like the same kind of funnel experience.
Isn't it brilliant, having worked in e-commerce for so long, like these conversations happen, then other stuff comes in, and then you realize that there are fundamentals that you should always do that shouldn't be lost sight of.
Yeah.
They then suddenly become back in focus, and maybe probably because a newer, younger generation of e-commerce managers, etc., are now starting to try and grow their capabilities and skills, and the tools are there to enable you to automate and execute this without so much reliance on developers. So I'm glad, because landing page optimization for me is something that people have taken their eye off the ball on. And it doesn't just mean creating loads of new ones. It can just mean dynamically changing content on a page so you get marketing to merchandising consistency. So I'll be chatting with a few clients
on that. The thing with this, I didn't mean nothing new here, but the thing that I guess I often lose sight of is our client is more of a premium brand. So I think some of, particularly that landing page applies at like, you know, some of the really high growth D2C brands or like certain categories like the health and wellness sector. It's more, but I think it's maybe working its way up. Do you want to go through your?
I'm not going to, because a couple of things you said, I'm not going to duplicate on that. But I think, interestingly, what I've seen is I've seen a couple of my clients who are really interested in getting into deeper detail around attribution, because they are, as you said, spending a load of money on acquisition. I've got a client who's, I think, you know, it's spending 50K plus a month on media acquisition. They're driving really good ROI in sales, but don't have the visibility of what the long-term impact, like how good are those customers? Are they giving away discounts to too many people who are poor customers and therefore they don't have the long-term profitability? Are they underestimating actually how much they can invest in their acquisition offers to get even more people acquired because the long-term profitability is really good? I just introduced one of my clients to Russell McAfee at Ringside. And if anyone out here who's not into data attribution doesn't know, thinks they have an issue and need to speak to an expert, go and have a chat with Russell and the team at Ringside. They are really smart in what they're doing with their tools. I'd like to profess to understand it all fully in detail, but I don't.
One, I think it's a we've definitely seen that track as well. And it's really, I think that's a really interesting area because, I mean, it's an interesting one where Shopify again has developed some kind of competitive advantage because, so I don't know how much you've looked at Triple Whale on North Beam, but Triple Whale in particular, it's like commoditized, like kind of the first, like, well, an entry level attribution. So probably 70% of our clients, or even maybe 90% of our clients, either used our plan.
Right.
And it was originally like a few hundred dollars. Now it's more sophisticated and more expensive. But they've basically got every brand over doing over 10 million, spend over 100 grand a month to start looking at it. And then North Beam is arguably like a level above. It's a bit more expensive. And then the other one I was going to mention was Fosper, who have kind of built a similar-ish solution, but more like agnostic. And we've had loads of clients using them as well. And I think there's pros and cons to it. And one of the interesting things, again, I think it's helped them become a commodity that I only just found out is TikTok. If you're spending a certain amount, will pay for the first 6 months to justify doing TikTok ads. So their model will essentially...
Right.
Prove the value of TikTok. But yeah, I think attribution is a really interesting area because Facebook and Google have just open sourced their attribution models as well. Their senses, so like Robin and forgot what the other one's called. But yeah, I think it's a whole new space, like compared to a few years ago when you just had like a Dometry and like Google's proprietary solution and it used to cost like hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Yeah, interesting. And an area I love because I don't know in detail because it's not my expertise. Therefore, I love speaking to the specialists who can educate me on it. The other thing, I guess the other guy to pull out key trends I've seen with my clients is I'm seeing a real split at the moment in, I've seen an uptick in people interested in replatforming. Last year, it's much quieter and it does tend to go cyclically. And also the economy has dampened people's enthusiasm for big capital projects for understandable reasons. So I've seen a bit of an uplift in inquiries and interest. I've seen a real split right now. I used to see kind of get more of a spread across different platforms. So I've seen almost like a 50-50 split between DC brands who are predominantly looking at Shopify and B2B looking at BigCommerce, those who want to go down to that SaaS route where you've got somebody providing you with the application support host and you don't have to worry about that. And I'm talking non-headless here. I'm talking people who are using like the themed approach in these platforms. Which is interesting to see that people are, I think people are kind of cognitively differentiating between Shopify and BigCommerce at this moment. Before, I've seen a lot more interest in people wanting to know. I've had more people question me about Centra, who Centra are, what do they do, who do they sue, how does it work. Not yet been able to get a project. I haven't found a project where I can bring it to the guys at Centra. I really rate them because I think they do. They've got some really smart SIs out there like Lime Sharp and Brett. So I'm really hoping, that's what I'm really hoping to do this year. So if anyone out there client-wise is considering Centra, I would love to chat to you and I'll happily invest a bit of my time to support you on that.
Yeah, I think we've definitely seen a lot more people looking at them as well. And I think they're winning some really interesting deals. Yeah. So yeah, that's definitely one of the things that we've seen. Although I definitely haven't spoke to as many people that are doing big replatforming projects. As I think we had a heyday. I can't remember when it was, maybe like 2 years ago.
Yes. The Sunlit Uplands.
Sure, there's so many projects run up. obviously we've spoke about it a lot. I think you discovered them first. Scale. I've seen that mentioned quite a bit more, actually. They're definitely getting into doors for sure.
Yeah. Well, winning Man United was, that always gets people's attention. They're a small team as well.
Find another one, I can't remember.
We'll find out. Right, I think that brings us to our rambling end to the February roundup. I hope you have enjoyed it. I hope it's been useful and relevant. Let us know what your thoughts are. And also, please do, when we post on LinkedIn, et cetera, drop a slide. Let us know what are the key things you've seen in the last month. What's got your attention in the e-commerce and tech space? We'd love to hear as well. Until next time, and don't forget to leave us that rating if you haven't given us one before. Keep your ear open because we drop an episode every week. Take care, everybody. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gerd, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.